Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacharya Sitani. So, tonight's Sunday feast topic is a secret because I don't know what I'm supposed to speak about. So that's why it's a secret. Do we have a topic or is it spontaneous? Does anyone want to give me a topic? Hare Krishna. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Krishna Chandra is asking if we can speak something on forgiveness. Maybe we can continue from where we left off. I think one of the most interesting things that I discovered when I studied the subject was that many devotees don't understand or don't know that forgiveness is an integral in a basic practice of Krishna consciousness or of bhakti, that it's part of bhakti. It's not something that you do if you can, or if you don't, it doesn't matter, but it's actually part of the process of Krishna consciousness. It's an essential ingredient that comprises what bhakti is. It's made of forgiveness. We discussed in the workshop, bhakti is made of three things: compassion, humility, and forgiveness. When you have those three, you have bhakti. And if you don't have those three, you don't. Or if you have when those three fully mature, then you have bhakti. One time I was told a story that a devotee was having some difficulty, and the devotee went to a professional counselor, and the counselor said, "You need to forgive. That will help you." And the devotee said, "Forgiveness is not part of Krishna consciousness." That was his response when he was told to forgive. He said, "It's not part of Krishna, it's not part of our practice." But actually, it's an essential part of our practice. And we all don't realize that. So, when I would say, at one point in my Krishna consciousness, I came across the understanding and practice of forgiveness. This was after probably I'd been a devotee 30 years. And I wasn't even aware of how important it was. But I became aware of how important it was by forgiving people that hurt me. And I saw how much it helped me. So then I began talking to devotees about it. And devotees began telling me that they had a lot of resentment for people that hurt them inside the movement, outside the movement. And the problem was much, much bigger, much, much greater than I ever imagined. Everyone I was talking to practically had some problem with it, either from growing up or some situation in their life within the movement. So it dawned on me, I said, "This is very strange, because you would think that an organization that has as one of its main tenets, one of its main teachings, the law of karma, which states that whatever happens to you is a result of what you've done." Right? Isn't that the law of karma? That nothing can happen to you accidentally. It all comes to you because of something you've done, even something you've thought. I thought, isn't it strange that an organization which teaches this, and not only teaches that, but teaches one to think whatever comes to you is the mercy of God. Not only, I mean, people understand karma, whatever you do comes back to you, but in Krishna consciousness, you understand it's the mercy of God. So not only do we believe in karma, but we believe that it's Krishna's mercy. So then I thought, isn't it interesting that an organization which has as its basic tenet that forgiveness is an inherent quality of bhakti, it's the foremost quality of the brahminical life, and we're all trying to have brahminical qualities. Inherent within the understanding of karma is that nothing happens that I don't deserve. And the Bhagavad philosophy is I even deserve worse, and Krishna was removing that. Now, having that philosophy, you would think nobody in ISKCON would have any issue with resentment, with revenge, with anger, or upset, because they would see that whatever happened, they deserved it. So that kind of hit me like a bomb on my head. I said, I'd never thought of this in this way. I said, isn't that interesting? We have a philosophy, but we have a whole organization that doesn't really always live that philosophy or understand it or practice it. So it became a concern for me. And you could take any aspect of Krishna consciousness. Humility, compassion, kindness, truthfulness, integrity, so many qualities. And then say, well, how well is it integrated within our lives as individuals and within the movement? And then oftentimes we find it's not. Kind of amazing when you think about it, isn't it? Then you start to question and say, what's going on? Now, the worst part of it. Then I discovered something else. This is all things I discovered over the years while I was teaching this. And this is really bad. Now, we would think the Krishna consciousness movement would be like antiseptic. So any disease that falls into it would be cured. It'd be like antiseptic, or it would be like an antibiotic, right? That's what you would think, right? It's pure. The movement's pure. So if anything impure comes in, it would be purified. Right? You would think, because it's a pure movement, a pure philosophy. Is that true? No. So I think the greatest travesty, the greatest injustice in a sense, is that someone could come to Krishna consciousness and have certain tendencies that not only got purified, but actually got magnified. That you could come into Krishna consciousness and your resentment doesn't get purified, but more resentment increases for other people. Which doesn't make any sense, does it? But it happens. And not only resentment, other things may happen. Material tendencies may get magnified instead of reduced. Someone may come and learn some bad quality within a spiritual organization. So this is this paradox. So I was looking at this, and I was in India, I was in Calcutta, and I was lecturing on this. And I realized that in India, this is a huge problem because of casteism, that people come to a spiritual movement thinking they're of a certain caste which is better than another caste. Right? You know, I'm of this caste, and this brahmachari is of this caste. So he might think he's of a better caste or a better position. So you would think, okay, you become a devotee, that would all be removed. But sometimes it's not. Interesting, isn't it? So this, I didn't understand this until I started teaching this, and then I became more and more aware of it. And I didn't actually realize how bad the situation was and how hurt people get and how much it sticks until I started teaching. And then I realized Kali Yuga is so bad. There's so many problems. And so many people have been hurt by loved ones, by people who are supposed to protect them, exploit them. And many devotees come to the movement and they're hurt and they don't know what to do and they don't know how to deal with it. Or they get hurt once they come to the movement and they don't know how to deal with it. And often, the way many people deal with it is they give up their spiritual life. Or they give up their sadhana, They remain devotees, but they give up strict practices, or they give up spreading Krishna consciousness, so they give up association because they get hurt. So when somebody left Krishna consciousness and they told Prabhupada, he would say, it's half their fault, but he said it's half our fault. He said it's 50-50. So and you would think that within the Sangha of Vaishnavas, or what we'd want to create within the Sangha of Vaishnavas, is something which is very pure. So when people come, they become very quickly purified. But it doesn't always happen. So in doing these courses and traveling to many places, it became evident that, and we all know this, it became evident that for many of us, it's difficult to forgive, and it's difficult to get along with certain people. And these things go very deep in our heart, and it hurts relationships. But I think even on a deeper level, what it hurts is our ability to share Krishna consciousness with other people. Because if we can't combine together with devotees in a way which we can inspire one another, but if we come together and we become upset with one another, then it damages our ability to help other people. So a lot of times, what we have to think about in our own life is not just about what we can do to help ourselves or what we're willing to do, but it's also about how we affect other people by our own Krishna consciousness or lack of it. Does that make sense? Because whatever amount of Krishna consciousness you get in your life, whatever amount of Krishna consciousness you can manifest, whatever you're willing to get, it influences everyone you're with. So if you're more Krishna conscious, people around you are more Krishna conscious automatically, right? And so when we allow ourselves to get upset about something, it hurts us. And then it affects people around us, and it affects our ability to be enthusiastic to spread Krishna consciousness. So one time there was a lot of friction in Los Angeles, and I was living there. It was 1972, and some devotees weren't getting along. So they told Prabhupada, and Prabhupada talked about it in the Bhagavatam class, and he said, you were rogues and demons before you became devotees. And if you give up the association of devotees, again you'll become rogues and demons. Because some devotees were saying, I can't live with the devotees, so I want to leave. So Prabhupada said, therefore, even if you don't like the devotees and can't get along, you have to associate with them. Because otherwise you'll go away from Krishna consciousness. Well, that was a principle Prabhupada himself taught. Even you don't like, you still have to figure out how to get along because you need these devotees. Now, there's a story. I don't know if I've ever told you this story. It's one of the most amazing stories about Sadhu Sangha that I've ever heard. It's a real life story. There were two devotees that were traveling together doing book distribution in America, and they had traveled maybe 2,000 miles from their temple. America's a big country, so you can travel across the country over 3,000 miles. So they had traveled about 2,000 miles from their home temple, and they were just two alone. And I think they were maybe 1,000 or 800 miles away from the closest temple. So they were isolated. There was no devotees. It was just two devotees. One devotee was in charge, which meant the other devotee wasn't in charge. The problem was the devotee that wasn't in charge didn't like the fact that the devotee in charge was in charge. You ever have that problem here? Prabhupada in one letter said, if you put two people together, there'll be an argument. He said, wherever, you know that story of the bangles? You know, she's cooking and the bangles are making noise, so she takes off bangles. Even there's two bangles that are making noise, so if you put two people, there'll be clash. So it was very difficult. They were having a very difficult time because they were always fighting. They basically hated being together, but they were traveling together, and this was their service, so they had to be together. So now they're together in this town, in what we say in America, in the middle of nowhere, just some town, you know, 16-hour drive from the closest temple, from the, you know, 16 hours. Imagine you're alone with one of the devotees and you hate them, and the closest devotee you could find is a 16-hour drive away. And everyone else, and you're in America, it's not Mauritius, it's a very materialistic country. So what they would do is they were doing book distribution, and one devotee would be dropped off to distribute books in one place, and the other devotee would drive to another place, and they would set a time to meet. So they would be, the devotee would be dropped off in the morning, and then the other devotee would say, I will be back at such and such a time, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, and I will pick you up. And they'd have lunch, and then they would go out and distribute books. So one evening, the leader came back with the van to find the other devotee, but he wasn't there. Sometimes in America, we'll distribute books on, you know, at a shop, like a hypermarket, place like that, and then they'll tell us we have to leave, so then we'll go across the street or go somewhere. So the devotee drove around, figuring, well, maybe he's across the street, maybe he's here or there. Couldn't find him. Then he thought, well, maybe he's going to come back here later. He drove back, couldn't find him. So picking him up 7 o'clock, he's not there at 7, 7:30, can't find him, comes back 8, 8:30, can't find him, 9 o'clock. Now, the most interesting thing that happened was both of them became a little concerned. And their concern was, maybe I won't find this devotee tonight. I don't know exactly where this other devotee ended up and why he couldn't come back. But because he couldn't come back on time, perhaps he came back later and the other devotee wasn't there. So he was worried, where is this other devotee? How will he find me? Because there are no cell phones in those days, no mobile phones. So both of them had the exact same thought, and it was this, and they were young devotees. Here I am in this city all alone. What could happen to me? Maybe I'll do something I shouldn't do. Maybe I'll end up going to a bar. Maybe I'll find a prostitute. Maybe I'll, who knows what I'll do. I'm alone. Young devotee. Both young devotees in a town by themselves. And so what do you think they were thinking? I hope I find the other devotee. They were very much in anxiety that they lost that association of the person that they couldn't stand. Interesting, isn't it? So they came to realize, even though I can't stand this devotee, it's because of this devotee that I'm Krishna conscious. It's very interesting. It's a wonderful story, isn't it? So obviously they were happy to meet one another, right? Very happy to meet one another, you know. Yeah, obviously then the relationship, they realized how important that relationship was for them. And that was the only way they could realize it, is Krishna took it away from them. And they realized that alone in that city, they may have fallen completely into Maya, totally. They may have broken the regular principles, maybe not had the power to chant their rounds. So, we go back to that story. Prabhupada said, even if you don't like the devotee, stay with them, because if you don't have that sangha, then you can't be Krishna conscious. Now, another thing that I learned is quite interesting, how I was speaking about this yesterday or the day before in class. One of the things that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that struck me, he said, sometimes a devotee will do something which is wrong or bad. And of course, sometimes there will be a concern that a devotee has done something wrong or bad because it may affect others and it may have to be corrected. But he wasn't speaking about that. He was speaking about just in general relationships and dealing, somebody does something wrong. And he said, but even if they do something wrong, you shouldn't find fault with them. And you would think, well, is that fault finding? Because usually you think fault finding means the person's not really at fault, but you say they are. Like you find a fault. Like Prabhupada said, envy means you find a fault, but there is no fault. So generally you could think of fault finding as the person is not bad, they didn't do something wrong, but I'm seeing something wrong. That would be fault finding. So you could say, okay, well that's not really right. You know, I'm seeing a fault, but the fault's really not there. Or there's a little fault and I'm blowing it up. So we say, okay, that's not right. But Bhakti Siddhanta is saying, even if there is a fault, everybody can see it. It's a fault. He said, even to meditate on that is wrong. And why is it wrong? Because it hurts us. That's why it's wrong. We suffer because of that. You see, how do you advance in Krishna consciousness? Vaishnava Kripa, right? The mercy of the devotee, the affection of devotee, the kind wishes of the devotee, make a devotee happy, please a devotee, pray to a devotee, serve a devotee. That's how you advance, right? So if that's how you advance, how do you harm your bhakti? You offend a devotee. You speak ill of a devotee. You criticize. It's the opposite. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is saying, even if the devotee has a fault, don't criticize him because it'll harm you. Because you would think it's okay if actually what they did is wrong. It's okay to point it out. It may be okay in some situations if your service is to deal with it, to do something about it, to help the situation. But in most cases, that's not the situation. It's just we see it, this is wrong, and we point it out. And it has generally what you see, the more you think about it, the more you talk about it, the more you point it out, the more ill effect it has on you. And you become very discouraged. Isn't it a fact? If you focus on something that isn't good and you focus on it long enough and you talk about it enough, you get very discouraged. So a lot of times devotees would say, doesn't this upset you? And I say, yeah, but I don't think about it because if I do, I'm going to get really upset. And I'd rather think about something positive that I could do to help spread Krishna consciousness or help the devotees. Even if it's not going to solve that problem, at least it'll solve potentially other bad things from happening. And that helps me. It's good for me, right? And so, why do I think like that? And you think, oh, Mahatma, he's so selfish. He's just thinking about himself. No. This Prabhupada said, you should save yourself first. Because how can you save anybody if you're not saved? Right? That's where you start. So I realized that if I want to encourage others, if I want to inspire others, I have to be inspired. I have to be encouraged. And if I focus on things I don't like about situations or people, I become very discouraged. And sometimes I become so discouraged, it's like, what's the use? It's true. Now I'm going to tell you a story. This is an amazing story. It's true, and it's sad. But there was a time, maybe about 6-7 years ago, I was thinking about some problems in ISKCON, and I was attributing these problems to a particular devotee. And the more I thought about it, the more I got disturbed. And I was talking to one of my godbrothers about it, and he said, well, why don't you write an article about it? So I wrote an article about it, but what actually happened in trying to describe and write the article, I inadvertently offended one or two very advanced devotees. I wasn't writing the article with the intention of offending them, but because I was so upset about what was going on and the people who in some way were responsible, I inadvertently was pointing out faults in the article. And actually, after I wrote the article, I kind of felt bad. I didn't feel inspired. And I never showed the article to anybody. I never put it on the internet or anything. But what happened was, this is a true story, immediately after I wrote that article, I started having problems in my spiritual life. I was feeling very weak, uninspired. I was having a hard time chanting my rounds. You know, that happens to all of us, but this was going on day after day after day after day. Sometimes it happens for a day or two or three, but this was going on day after day after day, and not only going on, but getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And then it hit this point. One morning, I was chanting my rounds, and it hit this point where it got so bad, I felt like there was a force on me that was making it, that was just pulling me into Maya, and I felt like I couldn't stop it. It was just pulling me. And at that point, I realized, I said, I offended this devotee. I said, there's no way something like this is going to happen to me unless I've done something to offend a devotee. And so it's like Krishna was just shining a light on my face. He said, you offended a devotee. This is why you feel this way. And immediately I prayed for forgiveness. And I swear, this is a true story. As soon as I finished that whole thing, it lifted off. That whole Maya pulling, it just went away like that. So Krishna showed me. He said, look what happened. That offense you made to the devotee, look at the effect it had on you. And as soon as you asked for forgiveness, it's like Krishna just lifted it off me. It's an amazing experience. Yes? In my mind. Yeah, he wasn't there. So I asked Krishna to forgive me, and I asked the devotee. It was kind of like, at least I felt, I had to tell Krishna that I realized what I've done. Forgive me for this. And to the devotee. But the way I processed it was to appreciate the devotee, because that's how I rectified the mistake, because I was thinking ill of the devotee. So in my mind and heart, I just changed how I was thinking about him to appreciate his service and his good qualities. So that was kind of how I forgave him, because it was more of an internal process that I needed to purify myself. So how I purified myself was I needed to change my attitude towards the devotee, to have a good attitude. So in that way, this is how I understood Bhaktisiddhanta's statement. It said, even where there's a fault, don't point it out, because this is what can happen to you. And you know, normally we'd think, if it's a fault, it's okay to point it out, because I'm not a fault finder, because there's the fault, and everybody can see it. And I'm just pointing out how it is. But even that's bad. Unless you're in a situation where you can help, or you've been asked to help, or you have a solution and the person's willing to hear it, that's different. So we were talking yesterday how one of the things that was starting to concern me a lot in teaching forgiveness was finding that there was so many devotees who were not forgiving. And some devotees who actually would just tell me, I'm not going to forgive. And the concern I had was, how could we be feeling like this and thinking like this if our philosophy teaches us to be another way, different way? So then I realized how we all come to Krishna consciousness with a blueprint. This is how we are. You know, we've learned to be a certain way through many, many lifetimes, right? Kam, Krodh, Lobh, Moha, Matsara. You know, we have all these. And we have a nature. This is what we're like. And then we come to Krishna consciousness. And we practice spiritual life. And we're supposed to learn to now purify, uplift, change that nature. The part of that nature that is contaminated or conditioned. And often we don't do that. We keep that nature and we practice Krishna consciousness. So that was bothering me, because I could see that was creating problems in our movement. Because we know the philosophy, yes, I should be like this, but when it came down to it, we often weren't living that, practicing it. And I'd see in myself how years and years and years I was not practicing. I was not practicing the things I would give classes on. I'd give these wonderful classes on humility. Fantastic classes. Incredible classes. Would I practice humility? No, I'd finish a class and I'd go, wow, that was a good class. I don't know if anybody could give a class on humility as good as what I just gave. That I realized that it's so difficult to understand where we were practicing and where we were not practicing. Even we're teaching it and we don't even realize we're not practicing. It's very subtle, right? It's not easy to see, right? Sometimes we act in a certain way, which other people will say, that's not Krishna conscious, and ourselves, we don't even notice. It doesn't dawn on us that that's not Krishna conscious. We told this story, I think it was last night, that a devotee wrote to Srila Prabhupada that he wanted to take sannyas. So that's not so bad, but what was bad is that he was married, newly married, and his son was 1 year old. So he wanted to leave his wife with a 1 year old son and take sannyas. I don't know, you know, you look at this and you think, wow, I wouldn't have the nerve to write Prabhupada and say I want to leave my 1 year old son and take sannyas. You would think like that, right? But he really, really wanted to do it. And he really thought this was the best thing and the right thing, and he wrote Prabhupada. Prabhupada told him many, many things. The letter's there in the Veda base if you want to see it. His name is Madhukara, 1973, Prabhupada wrote him. Said many, many things about this. And one thing that stuck with me, Prabhupada quoted the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, a devotee doesn't put anyone into anxiety. And Prabhupada said, do you not consider the anxiety you would put your wife into by leaving her with a one-year-old child? Didn't you even think of that? Didn't that dawn on you that devotees don't do this? That's the point. Even Prabhupada had to say, that's the point, that sometimes we act in ways which are not Krishna conscious, and we don't even realize it. It doesn't even dawn on us that it's wrong to leave your wife with a one-year-old child and take sannyas. And then, as they say, travel the banquet circuit. You know, the sannyasis get all the maha, so you go temple to temple and you do the banquet circuit, you know, while your wife and kid, you know, are on welfare and living in a one-room apartment, and you're out and all the devotees are going, Hari Bol Maharaj, you want some maha prasadam? Can I wash your feet? You know. That's the point, right? We can act in ways which are obviously not Krishna conscious and not even realizing. So it was a revelation that I had and in my own life. And subsequently, I focused on forgiveness. Of course, I'm teaching it, so teaching it has helped me. One powerful thing I realized by teaching it and practicing it, that I'm much more positive now, and negative things don't bother me because I realize how dangerous it is to focus on the negative, because it just pulls you in and it can actually destroy you. One of the things we noticed when we were young devotees, we didn't know anything, but we noticed this. You would see a devotee getting upset. We're talking devotees just a few years in the movement because we were all young. And you would see a devotee, sometimes a devotee would start to, you see something changed in him and they start complaining a lot. And they start finding fault. You know, they were fine. They were just nice devotees. But then something happens and they start complaining and finding fault. And we saw again and again, that was the indication they were going to leave. We always knew that. We said, something happened. This person is going to leave. So, I mean, not always, but often that was a foretelling that something problem in his life, and he continues doing this, he's going to leave. So, one time Prabhupada said, if we lose enthusiasm, everything will be finished. Right? So then you think, well, how can I be enthusiastic in Krishna consciousness if I'm always thinking about all the things that are wrong, either with our organization, other devotees, or myself? Even if I'm thinking about things wrong with myself, if I don't think of it in the wrong way, I could be very discouraged. Now, it's a fact, not trying to hide the reality, it's a fact, there's a lot of things to be discouraged about, aren't there? Discouraged about the world, discouraged about ourselves, I'm trying to be a good devotee and I keep failing. Discouraged about other devotees that you think should be better devotees than they are and they're failing. Discouraged about problems within the organization. Discouraged about how by now we should have been doing this, but we're only doing this. I mean, do you want to be discouraged? There's a lot to be discouraged about, right? If you're married, you can become discouraged about so many things. I have to work, my wife's not nice, my kids don't listen to me. You want to be discouraged, there's so many opportunities. But what's the point if you focus on that? What happens? You focus on all the bad things. Then you become discouraged. So what's the point? So my experience is, you find a service, you find something you like doing for Krishna, you get into it, you become enthusiastic about it, and you do it, and you inspire others. It doesn't mean all the bad things go away, it just means you're doing something positive, enthusiastically, and that will help you, it'll help the Krishna consciousness movement. Will you solve all the problems in the Krishna consciousness movement? Probably not, but you'll do a lot indirectly to solve problems by being enthusiastic and inspired in Krishna consciousness, because sometimes things go around the side, but the influence ends up solving a problem. So I've done that in my own life. I saw, well, there are a lot of problems I can't do anything about, but maybe I can try to help devotees be better devotees, and maybe by them being better devotees, the problems will go away, or they won't create problems that other people created. So here's a nice story. There was a group of women, and they formed an organization. It's called Women Against Drunk Drivers. And the reason they formed that organization, there's so many drunk drivers in America, and most of your accidents are because people are drinking. So a lot of children are killed in automobile accidents. So they formed this organization, and they wanted to